For Politico, I'm Ryan Heath, and this is Global Insider. We're now hitting the back end of the UN General Assembly high-level week, and I'm speaking to you from a Diamonds for Development gala dinner in the Upper East Side of New York City. But now we're going to talk with Prime Minister of Norway, Jonas Gahr Støre, about the failure of energy systems and what sorts of investment it will take to catalyze the most needed changes.
The energy poor countries are today responsible for 25% of CO2 emissions. That may grow to 75% by 2050. 3.6 billion people live in energy poverty. And as long as they are energy poor, that will be a major stumbling block for us moving forward on climate. So the Global Leadership Council has a part of that approach of bringing together private, public, in financial institutions, philanthropy, and to really make a difference, not by giving yet another speech, but being there with additional financing to fill in the dots of projects that are near realization and really to make them happen. So I think it's well worth a try, to push for change through this method.
Now, one of the ways a lot of people finally absorbing that climate change is real is through extreme weather events. And they're not even one-off events now, they're patterns.
No, that's true. In my childhood, we started our skiing season in the Oslo environment mid-November until late April. And that season is shrinking. But that is Norway at the 60th parallel. If you move north into the Arctic, you have an acceleration factor of, 1, 2, and 3. Of temperature increases. So if you move to Svalbard, Spitsbergen, which is the northernmost part of Norway, between mainland Norway and the North Pole, you have temperatures which we have never seen. So that is, in a way, the canary in the coal mine here. We can see it happening. And I think that's an additional reason why Norway is engaging, that we are first stage at observing this. Weather is wetter, wilder, and more unpredictable. Right now, in southern Norway, we are struggling with too little rain to fill up reservoirs for hydro water production. So this is something that Europe has to adapt to. If you go to Europe, in addition to the disastrous war in Ukraine, which is, and Putin's gas war on Europe, you have additional climate change symptoms. And they are all just reminders that we have to speed up.
Sticking with the energy theme, Gazprom has been fairly quickly pushed out of European energy markets. I think it's gone from around 40% share down to 10% share when it comes to the natural gas. How much of that gap is Norway able to fill? And how hard is it to scale up that production and to ship it to Europe? Because there's not always pipelines available to do that.
Well, first of all, I think it's an exaggeration to say that Gazprom is pushed out. Gazprom has pulled out. It's part of Putin's war on Europe. They have a military campaign in Ukraine and they have an energy war in Europe. So it's really Putin closing the pipelines step by step, and they are down to a very minor delivery right now. That is, for Europe, a major challenge. If you take away that portion, they used to deliver 40% of Europe's gas. So for Germany and France and the UK, all of that is very complicated. Now, what can then Norway do? Norway is now the leading gas provider to Europe. The companies producing and selling gas from the Norwegian shelf have been able to increase their deliveries by around 10%. And that 10% extra represents energy equivalent to 100 terawatt hours. So, it's a major additional contribution. That cannot replace what Russia pulled out. But we now, you see the clear pattern. The gas stock in Europe last fall was less than half empty, half full. Why was that? We now understand why. These stockings were owned by Gazprom, and it was obviously a part of the plan leading up to the Ukraine invasion. Now they are at above 80%, which is good. And part of that is Norwegian gas. But, these very high energy prices in Europe is not good for Norway. It is driving up electricity prices in my country to a level we have never seen. And secondly, these are our allies and partners. We are not served by their economies being being rocked, and that there is social pressure. And finally, you know, these are our trading partners. So when industry in Germany may be closing down, they will have subsidiaries in Norway also being hurt. So we want to make every contribution to replace this. And the answer, of course, in the short term, we need short-term answers, but the long-term answer is really to scale up renewable energy production. So the paradox of the Ukraine war is that it will be an accelerator actually on doing the right thing. More solar, more wind, more hydrogen, more carbon capture and storage from fossil fuel. And we need to do this, all of this, not in sequence, but together.
Obviously, as Prime Minister, you don't set gas prices, but there is pressure, for example, to put in policies like price caps on gas imports. What do you think of an idea like that? Is that one of the ways to help support people through this crisis, or is that too much of an intervention in markets?
Well, I mean, let me first say that in this phase, no solution should be out of off the table, no proposal, no idea. You know, we really have to work on this together. So I propose to create this task force with the European Commission, and the Commission President von der Leyen and I have agreed to set that in motion, because we are energy partners and we know how we can work together. Secondly, you know, thus far, I think the idea of creating price caps has been rejected, because the danger of doing that is that you may limit supply, and you may stop what really has to happen, namely that consumption goes down. When there is scarcity, you have to do something with the demand side. You know, coming as a social democrat from a Norwegian experience, what we normally say is that you sell and buy on market prices, and then you do the redistribution through other mechanisms, taxing systems, welfare state, and so on. So in my country, you know, oil and gas companies pay 78% tax. And then, you know, we as a government do redistribution through welfare system, hospitals, school, and other social benefits. Here, there are different experiences in Europe, but thus far, I don't think that this kind of intervention into the market will reach the target. It will not replace gas that we are missing.
One final question, and it's about the UN Sustainable Development Goals. We're halfway through that 15-year window to meet them, but we're a long way behind halfway in getting to those 17 global goals. So I guess my question is, what can Norway as a small country do to close that gap? And politically, what can you do to mobilize others like China? They have the resources now to have an impact at the global scale, and they don't really contribute at the level that they could.
Well, I mean, all that is affected, of course, by this brutal war in Ukraine, which is, you know, setting us back, not pushing us forward. You know, we are lagging behind on this timeline. We are lagging behind on the 2030 and 2050 line in terms of curbing emissions. But, you know, the part of me which has some optimism is that I believe that things are now being done, like the Biden package, that will help accelerate things in the next phase to come. And that's the important part. We need to scale it up with some dynamism. What can Norway do? You know, my take on this is that Norway will do what it can to reach our obligations. That will matter very little, because we are a small country with small figures. But the way we reach our targets may have a huge impact, because if we succeed with the offshore wind, that may have a major impact on what other countries can do. If we succeed, as we are about to do, on carbon capture and storage, commercially viable, then we may make a major contribution to how you can pull CO2 out of the energy chain. It will make a difference beyond Norway. And if we can, through partnerships as the one we have mentioned in this conversation, you know, make a contribution to add momentum, you know, to speed up things, then we can say that we have come farther. And you know, the Norwegian pension fund, which is the world's largest, is investing increasingly more in renewable energy infrastructure and production. And by that, we can also make a contribution, which is, you know, a bit beyond what you can expect from a country of 5 million people.
A great note to end on. You've been very generous with your time, Prime Minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
After speaking with the Norwegian PM, I headed to the Concordia Summit to track down one of the biggest players in the philanthropy world.
I'm Raj Shah. I'm the president of the Rockefeller Foundation.
Now, my tough question is, we have a much richer conversation at the UNGA of the 2020s versus the 1990s, let's say, but we're falling behind or off track in getting to the global goals of 2030. Is there anything that can change about how we convene this week to get us back on track?
Yeah, so we're dramatically off track. And we're dramatically off track because, frankly, COVID happened. The way the world responded to COVID was deeply inequitable. The resulting inflationary pressure and interest rate consequences are again deeply inequitable, and now 60% of developing and emerging economies are teetering on the edge of a debt crisis that's debilitating at a time when they need fiscal space and money to be able to invest in a climate transition to save our planet and give their people a chance to rise up. And so we have to continue to insist that the things we do here are at real scale. Like, we can't come here and talk about a project in a village, in a city, in a community, even in a single country. You need alliances like the Global Energy Alliance, and you need collaborators like those we're bringing to the Global Leadership Council to say, this is worth doing if we're going to reach a billion people mm-hmm. with renewable electrification who today don't have power. Or this is worth doing if we're helping 81 countries transition from fossil fuels to renewables mm-hmm. in a much more accelerated way. And we just need more leadership at that level. We had it coming mm-hmm. out of World War II.
Yep.
Leaders came together and said, we believe we should be fighting hunger together. We should believe economic stability in the emerging world is important for our security and safety. We won a Cold War by working collaboratively. We have to take that kind of mindset to this, and we can't get away with just talking about nice stories of small advances.
One of the strong points the Norwegian Prime Minister made was that though Norway is a small country, it has the possibility of catalyzing a lot of other change because of how it invests in this transition. And obviously, it's a rich resource country as well, so he's got some cash at hand, even if it doesn't have a lot of people. What does that demonstrate about the different contributions that can be brought to the table?
Well, I think the biggest demonstration is if you're committed to this transition fully, mm-hmm. no matter how you got to where you got to, you have a lot to offer, right? Mm-hmm. So Norway is a country that has unique fossil fuel assets, but they've managed to prioritize an energy transition for their own economy that can become, in part, an example for others. The Rockefeller Foundation mm-hmm. was endowed with resources that came out of the fossil fuel industry, mm-hmm. to say the least, and we've divested of those resources. Our biggest single project is supporting countries to transition off of fossil fuels and towards renewable electrification. Yep. And so many of the other partners that are part of this council are actually leading nations or communities that are trying to use renewable energy to reach everybody, not just, you know, few countries or a few people in wealthy countries.
Love it. And that's our show. Brooke Hayes produced this episode and is senior editor of audio at Politico. Jenny Arment is the executive producer of audio at Politico. And our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. This was the last episode of our special series from UNGA. Make sure you sign up for my free newsletter, also called Global Insider, at politico.com. I'm Ryan Heath. Thanks for listening.